Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. On March 23rd, the Little Sisters of the Poor, an order of nuns dedicated to serving the elderly poor, will stand before the Supreme Court of the United States to ask that they not be forced to violate their religious beliefs to comply with the Health and Human Services, or HHS, mandate, a regulation under the Affordable Care Act, which requires employers to provide their employees with health insurance coverage that pays for contraceptives and sterilization, as well as abortion-inducing drugs. Here to discuss the case and the underlying issues is Hillary Burns, Assistant General Counsel for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Hillary, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into the case, perhaps you can provide our listeners with some background about the Church's problems with the Health and Human Services mandate.
Well, sure. The HHS mandate is a regulation issued by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services that requires employer health plans to cover all FDA-approved contraceptives and sterilization procedures for women, as well as related education and counseling. This includes, as you mentioned, some drugs and devices that can cause an early abortion, such as the so-called week-after pill. The mandate was issued under a part of the Affordable Care Act that gives HHS the authority to decide what, quote-unquote, preventive services health plans are required to cover. So this is why the bishops have been objecting to the HHS mandate.
And I think it's important to state early on that the Church has long advocated for access to universal health care. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. So for decades, the Catholic bishops of the U.S. have been calling for genuine life-affirming reform to our country's health care system. The bishops established criteria, including moral principles, for fair and just health care reform. The bishop said that it should be a truly universal health policy with respect for life, human life and dignity, and that it should preserve freedom of conscience. They said that these moral principles were essential to health care reform during the whole health care debate. And the bishop's efforts have really been rooted in Pope St. John the 23rd's encyclical, Pacem in Terra, or Peace on Earth, which was issued in 1963. So that encyclical listed medical care among the fundamental human rights that flow from the basic dignity of the human person. So yeah, you're right that the bishops in the U.S. have followed this call, and they've been advocating in this country for fair and just health care reform that's in accordance with the Church's moral principles.
And of course, the Little Sisters are one of a number of institutions that have challenged this change in law. Some of which are Catholic and some of which are not. I think it's important for people to understand that the Church has went to great lengths to avoid these legal challenges by trying to address their concerns before the enactment of the Act. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. So the U.S. bishops repeatedly tried to work with lawmakers and Congress throughout the legislative process, and the bishops had a consistent message that health care reform must respect human life and dignity and preserve rights of conscience. But unfortunately, and really tragically, as it turned out, despite the bishop's consistent advocacy and support of fundamental moral principles, the Affordable Care Act, when it was signed into law, did not incorporate the moral criteria that they had been advocating for.
And there was a piece of legislation called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that was signed into law by President Bill Clinton in the 1990s that seemed to strike the perfect balance. And I think it's easy for people to lose sight of the fact that the Church and other institutions aren't looking for an expansion of existing laws, simply the status quo, which seemed to be working fine, right?
Yeah, that's right. So the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA as it's called, received almost unanimous bipartisan support when it passed Congress back in 1993. And as you mentioned, President Bill Clinton signed it into law with overwhelming support from both sides of the political aisle, and both secular and religious groups. So RFRA has worked very well over the last two decades because it provides a balancing test when the government attempts to restrict the free exercise of religion. The RFRA forbids the federal government from substantially burdening a person's religious liberty. There's only one exception. So the government can impose a substantial burden on religious exercise if it has a compelling reason and it furthers that compelling interest by the means least restrictive of religious freedom. So that's the legal question that's at stake here in the HHS mandate case. So does the government have a compelling reason to substantially burden the Little Sisters' religious exercise? And the Supreme Court has already found that the government failed that test under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act when it came to Hobby Lobby less than 2 years ago. And Hobby Lobby, of course, was a family-owned business that objected to the HHS mandate because it faced literally hundreds of millions of dollars in fines if it didn't pay for abortifacients for its employees. And the court should rule the same way, that the government has not met the high bar set under RFRA with respect to the Little Sisters this time around.
There are people who would suggest that groups like the Little Sisters have already been exempted from the law through an accommodation that the government provided. Can you break down for us what the accommodation says and why in this case and others it is not sufficient to address the concerns of the Little Sisters and others?
Sure. So I should start off by saying that houses of worship get a true exemption from the HHS mandate.
So parishes, you know.
Correct. Like churches, exactly. Parishes, they don't have to pay for these drugs or devices, and they don't have to arrange for someone else to do it. They're just exempt. But any other religious nonprofit entity is subject to what HHS calls its accommodation. And under that scheme, a religious nonprofit with a religious objection to contraceptives that's not a house of worship has to execute a form known as a self-certification. It then has to give the form to its insurance company. And alternatively, an objecting nonprofit may notify HHS in writing of its objection, and it has to include contact information regarding its insurer. So then HHS will contact its insurance company and say that they must provide the contraceptive coverage to the nonprofit's employees. Now, the insurer's receipt of the form from the religious nonprofit, well, that action triggers an obligation for that insurance company to provide or arrange for the coverage to which the religious nonprofit has an objection. So with the litigants, including the Little Sisters of the Poor, as well as dozens of Catholic dioceses, charities, hospitals, and schools, what they've been arguing is that the self-certification is a kind of voucher or permission slip that authorizes, and in fact, it compels the insurance company to provide or arrange the coverage that the non-exempt religious employer objects to. The nonprofit religious entities have asserted a religious objection to being forced to participate in this self-certification or accommodation process, which they're basically forced to authorize or facilitate the very coverage that they've objected to. So that's how the so-called accommodation works.
So it's really not an accommodation at all.
No, it's not. And although the government's trying to say that it's no big deal to just sign the form, the Little Sisters and many others recognize that forms and the words contained on forms have meaning. So otherwise, the government wouldn't be trying to make them sign the form.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's authorizing the very coverage to which the Little Sisters object. And the Little Sisters are saying, look, we don't want any part of this. In the Catholic Church, you know, our service ministries are part and parcel of our faith, and they're just as important as worship. So we shouldn't be penalized for practicing our faith, whether that involves, you know, providing a meal to someone at a soup kitchen or taking care of the elderly poor. Our ministries of service should receive the same exemption as houses of worship because they're all part of the same mission, you know, following our Catholic faith.
So bring us up to speed. How did this particular challenge by the Little Sisters make it all the way to the Supreme Court?
Well, when the HHS mandate was first introduced, it received widespread opposition from all kinds of people. Hundreds of thousands of members of the public, including perhaps some of your listeners, filed comments with HHS opposing the mandate. But HHS still finalized the mandate with a very narrow religious exemption, the one I mentioned that only applies to houses of worship. So many people facing extraordinary fines under the mandate decided to sue because they had no other options. In fact, over 100 lawsuits were filed in federal courts around the country challenging the legality of the HHS mandate. About half of the lawsuits were on behalf of family-owned businesses like Hobby Lobby, while the other half were brought by religious nonprofits like the Little Sisters of the Poor. Because the mandate went into effect first for the family-owned businesses, Hobby Lobby's case got to the Supreme Court first, and that case was decided in favor of Hobby Lobby in June of 2014. Well, the nonprofit cases went on a slower track because HHS decided to delay enforcement of the mandate against the nonprofits. So although the mandate was introduced, first introduced all the way back in 2011, the nonprofits are finally getting to have their day in court before the U.S. Supreme Court, and the day for oral argument before the court has been set for Wednesday, March 23rd.
So let's remind listeners, especially those who might not be familiar with the Little Sisters, who they are and what their mission is.
Sure. So the Little Sisters of the Poor run nursing homes for the elderly poor, and they do this, both across the United States as well as in several other countries around the world. They were started by St. Jean Jugon in France in the 19th century, and she was actually canonized in 2009. So the Little Sisters have dedicated their lives to living with and caring for the elderly poor. They're not focused on advocacy or policy issues, but they simply want to continue their work of serving the poor, just as they've done for the past 175 years.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore, and we'll be back with Hillary Burns of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in just a moment.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. First of all, the Catholic Review would like to take the opportunity on this Palm Sunday to wish you and yours a blessed Holy Week. Visit CatholicReview.org for coverage of this most important week on the church calendar. Yesterday, the youth and young adults of the Archdiocese marched through the city on their annual pilgrimage, carrying a cross and witnessing to the faith along the way. On Monday, March 21st, tomorrow, there will be more priests in one spot in the Archdiocese than on any other occasion as they gather to renew their vows at the annual Chrism Mass. At the Mass, celebrated at the Cathedral of Mary Our Queen in Homeland, Archbishop William E. Laurie will also bless the sacramental oils used throughout the year in the ministry of the Church. Please continue to visit CatholicReview.org for more Holy Week coverage. Also this week, be sure to pick up our latest print edition, available at your parish or in your mailbox. This month, we talk to Sister Lorraine Marie Claire McGuire, Mother Provincial of the Little Sisters of the Poor. Sister Lorraine covers her Catholic roots as well as the ways in which the average person can assist the Little Sisters in their mission, bringing comfort and solace to the elderly poor. Of course, she also touches on the Little Sisters' legal struggles with the federal government over the HHS mandate. Also, Archbishop Laurie shares his thoughts on Divine Mercy Sunday, celebrated the Sunday after Easter, and we take a look at what's happening around the Archdiocese for the feast day, designated in the year 2000 by Pope St. John Paul II. It gets more popular with Catholics every year. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, The Catholic Review. Pick up the print magazine monthly at your parish or have The Catholic Review delivered to your home every month. You can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
We're back here on Catholic Baltimore speaking with Hillary Burns, Assistant General Counsel for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. One of the X factors, if you will, in this case is the current makeup of the court, given the recent death of Justice Scalia. Is there any speculation about it, given its current makeup and how and when it might rule?
Sure. Well, of course, people were expecting that Justice Scalia would have been a sure vote in favor of the Little Sisters. But even after his passing, we're still hopeful that the court will do the right thing and protect the Little Sisters from having to pay onerous fines to the federal government. I mean, they're facing about $70 million in fines if they do not comply with the mandate. So it's important to note that even some of the more liberal justices who voted against Hobby Lobby have sided with some of the nonprofit religious entities challenging the mandate, especially when it came to granting them relief from, emergency relief from imminent massive fines.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hopeful that the court will do the right thing, and we're expecting a possible decision by late June, which is when the court's term ends. But it's also possible that the court may decide to delay its ruling until a ninth justice is confirmed to replace Justice Scalia.
This is an important case. Can you sum up what the ramifications of the ruling would be for not just the Little Sisters, but for others?
Absolutely. So the ramifications are going to be far-reaching. I mean, the ruling is going to affect the court's interpretation of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the federal law that I mentioned. So it's going to affect religious groups and people who have cases under RFRA, for example, by interpreting what a quote-unquote substantial burden is and how much the government has to prove to show that it actually has a quote-unquote compelling interest. So the ramifications could affect what the government decides to do going forward with other mandates, such as mandates to provide elective abortions, including late-term abortions, as well as assisted suicide, any kind of mandate that could come out on that. So the case is important not just in terms of providing long-lasting relief to the Little Sisters, but also in terms of protecting religious freedom for all religious believers, no matter the issue at stake.
You mentioned previously Hobby Lobby was a plaintiff in a similar case. Were there others?
Absolutely. So there were over 100 lawsuits that were filed challenging the mandate, with about half on behalf of the for-profits and half on behalf of nonprofits. And there are now actually 7 cases involving nonprofit religious entities that the Supreme Court has decided to hear. So it's not just the Little Sisters of the Poor, but other cases involve the Archdiocese of Washington and the Dioceses of Erie and Pittsburgh and related diocesan ministries like Catholic Charities and schools. And really all kinds of charitable entities, including hospitals, substance abuse recovery centers, K-12 schools, universities, all types of faith-based entities have challenged the HHS mandate in court. And it's really kind of a remarkable cross-section of people who are simply doing good work around the country who are challenging the mandate.
And we should point out the faith-based groups are not just Catholic. I mean, even Hobby Lobby, I believe, is the ownership group there is not Catholic.
That's correct. They were evangelical Christians. And so we've seen, for example, Mennonite Christians and a number of other groups. And also we've seen Muslim and Jewish groups who have supported the cases at the Supreme Court by filing supportive briefs saying, protect their religious freedom because, we have an interest in everyone's religious freedom being protected.
And I guess that goes to my next question, which is why, regardless of faith, this is something people should be concerned with and take notice of, right?
Absolutely. I mean, really, it goes back to, I think, our country's founding. We were founded on the principle of religious freedom. People escaped religious persecution in Europe to come here to the U.S. for protection. And we really serve as a beacon of hope and freedom for people around the world. I mean, we continue to have people come to our shores who are escaping religious persecution even today. And Pope Francis actually said that religious freedom remains one of America's most precious possessions. And he said that, quote, all are called to be vigilant, precisely as good citizens, to preserve and defend that freedom from everything that would threaten or compromise it. So he, when he came to the U.S., he said many things that were supportive of religious freedom, and I think he realized that religious freedom is truly under threat in the U.S.
Yeah, he spoke about it, I think, probably more often than people thought he would, including in his talk in Philadelphia at Independence Mall. He met privately with the Little Sisters in Washington. I think that was was a big surprise during his visit, just how much he focused on it. So this is an issue of importance to him, and I'm sure there'll be eyes on this ruling and just to see what direction this goes in. What have the U.S. bishops said about maybe not the case in particular so much, but the issue itself?
Yeah, well, the bishops have been consistently and vigorously opposing the HHS mandate for years now, and of course, they established the Bishops' Ad Hoc Committee for Religious Liberty, which Archbishop Lurie is the chairman of. And so they've been trying for many years to fix the HHS mandate via legislation in Congress. And they've spoken more broadly about the issue of religious freedom at home and abroad in many other areas, not just the HHS mandate. And I think they realize the principle that is at stake here, and that the effects of the Little Sisters case in particular could have really far-reaching effects for religious freedom for decades to come, however the court rules in that case. And so the bishops have issued a number of statements, like they issued a 2012 statement called United for Religious Freedom that was unanimously approved by the body of bishops. So I think the bishops have been in the U.S. have been really unified on this issue, and of course they were encouraged by Pope Francis's visit as well. And so they've been just consistently speaking out for religious freedom, not just for Catholics, but for all people of goodwill.
And one of the initiatives that the bishops began a number of years ago to help bring greater visibility to the issue is the Fortnight for Freedom. Can you talk a bit about that, please?
Sure. So the Fortnight for Freedom is going to happen once again from June 21st to July 4th. It was started in 2012. And the theme this year is Witnesses to Freedom, and so it's focusing on, looking to examples from both the past and present who, have really borne witness to having religious freedom, whether they're martyrs for the faith or they're just ordinary people really living lives of great courage in, trying to establish, for example, Catholic schools and other institutions in this country and around the world. And so that's going to happen again this year from June 21st to July 4th. And Archbishop Lurie, of course, will celebrate the opening Mass at the Baltimore Basilica on June 21st. And then the closing Mass will be celebrated on July 4th at the National Shrine in Washington, D.C. And, of course, we'd like to see as many people participate as possible in praying for religious freedom, especially since we expect the Supreme Court to rule in the Little Sisters case sometime during the fortnight.
So what's the best way for Catholics to learn more about the fight to preserve religious liberty in the United States?
Sure. Well, they can go to the Bishop's Religious Freedom website, which is uscb.org/freedom. You can also follow us on Twitter at @USCCBFreedom, and you can text the word freedom to the number 377-377 to sign up for religious freedom text alerts. You can also sign up for our free-to-serve email newsletter, which you can do by visiting our website, which, again, is uscb.org/freedom. USCCB stands for U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. You can also find prayers and educational resources on the website. There are really many, many ways that people can learn, they can pray, they can act to preserve religious freedom.
Hillary Burns of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, thanks for being with us today to talk about this case and about religious freedom in the United States.
Thank you for having me.
For over 200 years, the Archdiocese of Baltimore's Catholic schools have welcomed families of all faiths, providing generations of students with an academically excellent value-based education taught in a Christ-centered environment. With a 99% graduation rate, the highest in the nation, and a 98% college attendance rate, Catholic school graduates are better prepared to succeed in college and beyond. But Catholic schools offer more than an education. They offer tradition, family, faith, and the opportunity for students to grow as individuals and as future leaders in their community. Discover these and other benefits of a Catholic school and learn more about why Catholic schools are an unparalleled value in education in the Baltimore region. Call 1-800-5-CATHOLIC or visit www.archbalt.org. Catholic schools, a place to grow.
This Lent, Catholics in the Archdiocese of Baltimore are invited to participate in a special worldwide initiative of Pope Francis called 24 Hours for the Lord. Parishes throughout the Archdiocese will be offering 24 consecutive hours of Eucharistic adoration, along with extended hours for the Sacrament of Reconciliation, as well as other opportunities for prayer, reflection, and fellowship. The Archdiocese of Baltimore has designated multiple locations to host this special program, designed by Pope Francis and the Vatican to help Catholics throughout the world observe this year of mercy. For a list of parishes participating in 24 Hours for the Lord and more information about the Year of Mercy, visit archbalt.org. That's archbalt.org.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.